Okay, you're really welcome to church this morning, wherever you've come from, especially if you're a visitor, and I see a number of visitors in church. We hope that you're comfortable. And I've got a visitor I want to introduce to you. So, Shane, if you'd like to come up and grab a seat here beside us. This is Shane. He's keeping his coat on in case you don't like him so he can leave early. That's not true. Okay, Shane, you're really welcome to Belfast. Is this the first time you've been?
Yep. First time on a plane.
Seriously? Yeah. First time on a plane.
Nearly had an heart attack.
Okay. Good. And I'm glad you got here anyway without the heart attack. That's really good. So, Shane, you're really welcome to Carn Money. We appreciate you being willing to come here. The last time I heard you, you were speaking at the Royal Albert Hall, so this has got to be a bit easier, I'm guessing. You don't know. Okay. Would you like to tell us a bit about who you are and what you do at the moment?
Yeah. My name's Shane. I come from the northeast of England, in Middlesbrough.
We would never have guessed that.
And now I work for Alpha for Prisons, Holy Trinity Brompton, up in the northeast. Go in prisons and help the lads. And I do like Alpha training and stuff like that. And we do it. And I've done. Help set up a connect group, which is then spread around the northeast. So, like, loads of churches are sort of getting in touch with me and asking me if I can help them set one up in their local area. So, and that's to be set up around about being comfortable for everybody, but also be comfortable for when offenders get released from prison, so that there's somewhere for them to get released to. And the plan is basically to have a place where they feel a bit comfortable, but ultimately to try and direct them into the church from there. So it's like an outreach kind of connect group thing.
So okay. Personally, family-wise?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm married now. I've got 5 beautiful children. I've got a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old with a... I need to correct myself. I don't even know how many kids I've got now. 5-year-old, and 2-year-old, and then little baby, I think.
Okay, that's good. Maybe you should check when you get back home. I mean, you've got 5 children that young, you know, and you nearly had a heart attack on a plane. I think you'd be more likely to have a heart attack day by day. But anyway, 5 children, wow. So they're all young. Some of them are at school, some of them are not then, okay?
Yeah, the 2 youngest ones aren't, the rest are full-time school. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so you work for Alpha. You're involved in doing and encouraging churches to get involved in supporting people coming out of prison and stuff like that. You've got a wife and 5 children, you think. And you sound like a fairly ordinary, regular kind of guy.
Yeah.
But life wasn't always like that for you.
No.
Do you want to tell us a bit about what happened and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah. When I was a younger person, I ended up getting in with the wrong crowd. But what it was is, when I was in school, I seemed to be the only person in my school at the time who had carrot ginger hair. And I seemed to get picked on a lot, bullied and picked on. And so it led me to going into the wrong crowd, who sort of like let me fit in with them. But they were criminals, opportunist thieves, we call them. And we'd just go out in the early 90s in the northeast of England. It was massive for pinching cars and then going out and joy rides and hanging out the windows, get the helicopter out. We thought it was all fun. And burgling houses, robbing shops, just anything I could thieve, I would thieve. And that was what we all did. That's all I ever knew. But when we getting picked on a bit, I remember making a little pact in my head that one day no one's going to pick on me again, but thought nothing of it. And just carried on doing my burglaries, being a high-profile, prolific offender. And it eventually led to me... I had an uncle who had a reputation, not to be the hardest man around, but he had a reputation for being a fighter. And he was like a god to me. I loved him. I remember walking down the street, I'd stick my chest out like I'm with my uncle, you know. He was my role model, he was my father figure. And that's who I wanted to be like, but worse. As I got older, I started to fight back and realised that for the first, the attention that I was getting, and I liked it. And it led to me just being up, and I didn't rely on becoming a bit mentally unstable as well. And I started suffering with a bit of mental health and having that feeling of never being able to back down. And even if I wanted to, I couldn't, because I just felt it was the worst thing in the world. This led to me being a fight, like going around fighting people. It led to me eventually going into Hartlepool Town Centre. And there was another local nutcase or whatever, you know, handy lad. And we had an altercation, and in the middle of the town centre, we sort of brought to a standstill because he pulled out a hammer and I pulled out a 9-inch kitchen blade, and we sort of ran at each other. He hit me across the head with a hammer, and I stabbed him 4 inches through his head. This led to me being on the run for attempted murder. While I was on the run for attempted murder, I went to a totally different area in the northeast of England. And I used to sell ecstasy tablets, and I couldn't get rid of them, so I went into this club to give the ecstasy tablets to somebody, and didn't realise that there was a local hard lad what got told something, what got him involved in a situation. And he came and he pulled me aside. And all I can remember is at that time my life was all about a reputation. And I just remember looking to the side while he pulled me up and sat me down. And I just remember looking to the side and thinking to myself instantly, if I don't do anything here now, all these people have seen him pull me up, and then I look like an idiot, looks like I backed down. And so I made a decision there and then to make an example of him, because I knew everyone in that club would have went out and told everybody what had just happened. But as I was making my choice to do this, he said the wrong thing to me. He said, you want to mess about with the big boys, do you? And that made me, I'd sort of smashed my face into his face. And I went, no. I said, you just messed about with the big boy. And I said, get outside, because I'm going to kill you. And he didn't believe me. And eventually that led to him coming to the top of the stairs on the club. And I waited until the door opened. And when, as soon as the door opened, I turned around and I stuck the knife straight through his top of his chest, straight through his body. He slumped to the floor. His friends jumped off, and it was like a standoff. They had knives, and then the police come and everybody ran. I was on the run for 2 attempted murders. And you go into like a I don't care wild kind of mentality then, or I did. I'm going to get a big sentence or sack it, get as many people who are classed as an enemy as I can. And I just went round wild, kicking certain people's doors in and just going absolutely off my head. To cut all that short, I ended up going to prison. But when I went into prison, I made a little pact in my head that I wasn't going to be a mug. I wasn't going to be an idiot, for some people who don't know what that means. But not to the inmates, for the officers too. They were going to know that I was the real deal. And I went into North Allerton Prison and went wild. It was the young offenders that came the top dog, or whatever they call it. I was running about, running people's cells, beating them up, fighting with officers. It finally led to me going to a man's prison. When I went to a man's prison, they wouldn't let me go to the gym. And back then, gym was my life. I was 19 stone, no neck, walk about, used to love training. And they were taking the mick.
What age were you at that stage?
But I just turned 20, 21.
Wow. Okay.
And I remember the prison officer coming to my door, because you press the buzzer, your cell buzzer, when they shout Jim at the end of the wing. And he was letting everybody out, but never came to my door. And so I pressed the buzzer and he came, and I said, look, what you not let me out for the gym for? He went, I'll make sure I let you out for the gym. When the gym come, he didn't let me out. And so I just felt he was disrespecting me, and I had to make an example of him. And I remember pressing the buzzer when he came to the door, and we had a little argument. I said, I want to kill you. I want to get you for this. And he went, oh, whatever. You know, I've heard it all before. And I said, all right, then we'll see. And he walked off. Went out in association where all the inmates play pool and they all get let out in the wing together. And I went up to a few lads and I said, look, at the end of the wing there's gates, like metal bars and there's a little gates. And the prison officers sit at the end of the wing near the gate, so if it really kicked off, they could get off the wing and lock it off straight away. So I got these two lads to go over and talk to the prison officer. And when the two lads went over and was speaking to him, it was simply when a kicked officer to stand in front of him, so he had no choice but to run at us rather than get off the wing. I went up to a prison inmate and I said, look, I start chucking the pool balls at the officers, and when he comes, I'll deal with the rest. And he did. He started chucking the pool balls at the officer. He drew his bat on, he ran at him. And I'd come out my cell in a towel with a big, massive coffee jar, glass coffee jar like that. And I waited until he came near that inmate, and I smashed the bottom of the coffee jar off, and I ran up and I stabbed him 3 times. Another prison officer come, and I stabbed it. Was alleged to have stabbed him. This led to me being classed as a very dangerous prisoner, and you would have thought that would have chilled me out and calmed me down, but it didn't. I went to the maximum security prisons in England, Franklin, Full Sutton, Long Larton, Whitemoor, dispersal system, they call it, and went wild there. And it led to me, just every time my door opened, I fight the system. It led to me being put on CSC. It's a close supervision circuit in the prison system. So just as a little understanding, it's like you've got a maximum security prison designed for dangerous prisoners. I get segregated off from that and then segregated off from the segregation. That's how bad it is. I was fed through a hatch in the door, so they'd have a box. They would lock the box on and open one side, put your food in, lock it, no physical contact. If your prison cell door opens, you have to be like 6-7 prison officers in riot gear, and it takes you about an hour to go from here to there, how slow they take you. And still, when my door opened, I'd fight the system. Still try and win, still attack them. Mentally, my head wasn't in the right place at all, obviously. And I just sort of, that was my life for years and years in the prison system, segregation, fighting the system, hating the system. I had such a hatred for authority. And this is how deep my hatred went. Even normal, like the fire brigade, because I knew the government paid them, I hated them too. That's how bad my hatred for the system was. If the government paid them, I hated them. You know, it was hot. I just hated them. And it led to me eventually going through the segs. I went to where they put me on a ferry, and it took me to Parkhurst on the Isle of Wight. And I got there, and they were nice with me. You know, it was a lower category, so they were a bit sound with me. They knew my record, and they were giving me little privileges, giving me things I shouldn't have been, like, having and stuff like that. So I liked it. But then I got involved in selling heroin and couldn't believe how much money and how many drugs was in the prison, really. And while I was on the wing, this Christian called Ronald Bull, lifer, he's still in jail now, come up to me. And he started saying, Jesus loves you, let go of your heart. And I thought, what an absolute crackpot he is. You know what I mean? I just thought he's off his head. And I used to, like, me and my mates be like, oh, he's that mad nutter again. But he'd just keep coming. And we would be, like, having meetings. We'd sit in the cell and have a meeting. And we'd be in a meeting, loads of us, about drugs and how drugs can come into the prison and who's going to pass them around the jail when they come over, stuff like that. And he'd just come bursting in the door, going, Jesus loves you, let go of your heart. We'd jump up, chuck him out and shut the door. And just thought, he's off his head. Do you know, that's what we thought. But all these conversations one day, and do you know what? It is a biblical principle, what he said. But it's about freedom. But it's not biblical if that's not the Bible kind of thing. And he said to me, I'm in prison for the rest of my life. I've been in for years, and I'm probably never going to get out again. He said, but I'm free. And for the first time, out of all of our conversations we had, I thought, I couldn't grasp it. I just kept thinking, how are you free? You're in jail forever. How are you free? I don't get what you're saying. But it bothered me, and I would go back to my cell, and I would think about it. While all this was happening, all the prison officers come individually and took me and a couple of people I was involved in with, and one by one took us off the wing, said we were getting put under an investigation into subversive behaviour, and because I was off a council state, I was like, what on earth does that mean? It's a dictionary word, you know what I mean? I didn't have a clue. I found out in the end, but I didn't know at the time, and smuggling drugs into the prison, and they took us all into segregation. And this, I was there for a couple of weeks, and I remember this image in my head of this Christian and this urge telling me to write my letter. And it was that strong, I was walking up and down myself, cell, talking to myself out loud, going, how can I write to him? I don't even know who he is. And like, after a couple of days, I sent a letter and the vision went. About 2 or 3 days after, I got a 10-page, double-sided, A4 piece of letter all the way through. Jesus loves you. Let go of your heart. You've got to soften your heart. Jesus, Jesus. I just thought, whoa, he's definitely, no, he's gone. He's mentally ill. I was the mentally ill one, but I thought he was. And it's basically, that was the beginning, you know, that was it. And then they come to my door after a couple of months of me kicking off and going on protests and stuff like that. Eventually, I went to back to the maximum security prison. I think it was Longlarton. Was it Longlarton? Longlarton or Full Sutton. And I went there and I went in. And you've got to see, I think you've got to see God in this. I'd never, ever, ever heard of an alpha course in my life. Never even knew it existed. And I just remember a couple of weeks into it, the prison officer came to my door, and he said, go to education department. And sent me to the education department. When I got to the education department, he said, your name's not on the list. And just to let you know how serious it is, it's a maximum security prison with very powerful and dangerous offenders who have got the capability and means to do things. Not me, by the way, but there is people in there. So if you're not on the list and they let you through and you're in a part of the prison you shouldn't be, what happens to them officers? If I got through there and I killed an inmate, I shouldn't have been there because I wasn't on the list. They'd get sacked. It's very important. But I'd done their heads in, no arguing with them. And eventually, one of the officers went, go to the chaplaincy down there. I walked into the chaplaincy and I saw this row, this line of chairs with all these inmates on. And I saw a video playing with this posh man talking. Hello, do you know, all that stuff. And sorry about any posh people, I don't mean... And I just sort of like, I sat down, I remember sitting down, I thought, oh no, it's a Christian thing. And this little woman sat forward and she went, are you meant to be here? I was like, I don't know. She said, your name's not on the list. I went, oh, I'll go then. And as I went to get up, one of the inmates went, you get free chocolate gattos and biscuits. I said, miss. I said, miss, can you put my name down? So I started carrying, and this was a few weeks into the alpha. It wasn't the first one. It was a few weeks into this alpha course. So I'm sat on the alpha course and I'm arguing. No, science proves you're all wrong. I was going to go to the library to get a science book to prove them, disprove them all wrong and all this stuff. And it comes for a Holy Spirit day. There's a day on the course where they dedicate and they come and pray for you. And that happened. I thought, yep, off it. They're off their heads. And then the pastor come to me. And he said, I've never done this in all the years I've worked here. But God has just told me to tell you to come here this afternoon. And I'm making a cup of coffee and thinking, yeah, all right, and I'll come. And my motive was this. Get out myself for the afternoon. Coffee, biscuits, you know. That was my motive. So I went back over on the afternoon after bang up, went into the, found the pastor, we went in the chaplaincy room, he got the two chairs and he said one verse I clearly remember, and it's, no one's righteous, not one, we all fall short of the glory of God. And the other one was about Jesus dying on the cross, and then he gave an explanation, explained what it meant, and he said, pray. And I said, God, if you're real, come into my life because I hate who I am and who I've become. Nothing happened then. I said my prayer and I stopped praying. And as I was talking to the pastor, I started to... feel like an energy feeling in my stomach, and it started to raise up and raise up and raise up, and it just shot up my body, and I just knew from that moment on God was real. I just knew. And the first thing I said to the pastor was this: don't you dare tell anyone I've been crying, you. and do you know what he said to me? He said these, and do you know what the wise words really, thank you, The wise words Because he said, if it's God, and I didn't know at the time, I just remember him saying it. He said, if it's God, I won't need to tell anyone because you'll do it yourself. And this is where it gets funny, because I became worse than that nutcase.
By the way, that guy that just gave you a tissue is a prison officer.
I just remember running on the wing with a Bible, and in top security prisons, when they do doing movements, they tend to stand together. There's a lot of people who are willing to attack officers and stuff, so they'll stand together. And I remember running on the wing with a Bible, jumping in front of these officers. They've all jumped back thinking something was going to go on. I went, it's real. And they were like, all right, what's he on about here? And I was like, it's real. They were probably thinking, oh, he's one of his episodes again. You know what I mean? And I was going, it's real. And finally I went to them. They went, who's real? I went, Jesus Christ, he's real. He all split up and walked off. I went in my mate's cell. He's eating his dinner. You know, like it switched. You know, we were thinking, it just switched. I ran in. I went, Jesus, real. I've just been crying. He jumped up, took me out. He was like, see you later. And I've never seen him since. All my mates, I was writing to my mates, telling them, Jesus is writing all them 10-page letters. They were getting 20 pages. And I was writing to them all saying, Jesus is real. And they were like, I got one letter back off one lad from Birmingham. And he just said, look, I'll carry on writing to you, but cut the Jesus out or you won't be getting no more letters from me. And obviously he's not writing back because he got another 20-page letter saying, Jesus is real. And my life overnight, and I don't say this to brag really, because I didn't even know this until Nicky Gumbel actually told us, is that I was classed as, I was on the list of the top 6 most dangerous prisoners in the country. And I went from that overnight to being from segregated off to becoming a chaplaincy orderly. And in prison, I don't know about over here, but in prison over there, it's a privileged job. I end up in Hans where you get extra privileges. And yes, you do get Argos catalogues in prisons over there. So, you know, not bragging about that, by the way. But, and I just sort of like, my life totally transformed. And then I ended up getting out and I got married. I've got 5 beautiful children. And the biggest thing for me is what gets me is, here we go again. The thought of how I would have brought my kids up, knowing what I would have done to the mind and how I would have twisted the brain, filled them with steroids, got them into training, drummed it into the head, you've got to be hard, you've got to fight. If anyone hurts your dad, you've got to revenge them. That's what they would have had. That's the up, and probably his domestic violence too, because I was a violent, short-tempered person. And now they get Bible studies at night. They go to church. Most of my family are rather criminals or scam the system in some way, you know. They've all got bad backs. But, do you know, but for the first time, what I can remember, not just am I changing, but my whole family is. And you wouldn't believe how much they know more about the Bible than me. In fact, my daughter's 7, and she comes in going, Dad, see this times table? And I say, isn't it that? And I'm like, go and see your mum. You know what I mean? But my life is just absolutely amazing, and I just, and I'm meeting amazing people and being connected to amazing people. And the biggest thing for me is knowing that people have been coming to God, and I've seen people come to God, and I've even there's been times where I've come and give a testimony, went off, come back the year after, and someone's come up and went, oh, hiya, I'm an ex-offender, and I've been to church ever since I heard. Do you know what I mean? And that's the biggest blessing for me. And do you know, the gospel to me is this. There's 2 kinds of Christianity. There's the religious side of Christianity, who tells you must be this way and you must do this. And then there's a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And the Bible tells us that every single person on the whole planet is sinful and sinners. And to be truthful, if we all look at ourselves now, every one of us would probably end up in hell if we passed away, if it was on our own merit. But the Bible talks about good news. It talks about Jesus Christ coming and dying on the cross for our sins, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have everlasting life. And that's what he's done for me. And I can say to anyone in here, I promise you, I am not here blagging. I know what happened to me in that jail. And I know for a fact that Jesus Christ is real. And I hope that today you've heard what I've said, and I hope it's planted some little seeds, and I hope that God comes into your life, because if he does, it doesn't just change the way you look, it changes how you think, how you are as a person, and it changes your whole life. And most of all, you know that heaven and hell's real and you're going to heaven. And that is because of Jesus Christ. And thank God and thank Jesus Christ for my life that he came to me in that prison on that day, because if he didn't, there's only one way I'd have went. Death, lifed off. That was my life. And that's where I would have went. How many people I would have hurt. And I have remorse. But one big thing I've forgotten, it's just come to mind. So obviously God, because I didn't, God just brought this to my mind. And you said there's a prison officer over there, so I've got to give some good stuff into it. The prison officers in, you would have thought would have been the last prison to have me anywhere near. You would have thought they would have let me in others to see what it's like, save a bit of trust. When I got out of prison within about a year and a half, the governor gave a high prison officer who was friends with the prison officers who stabbed permission to come to my house and have a coffee with me, because they want to come and do some stuff with me. How crazy is that? I get into the prison, and who walks in? One of the prison officers who was stabbed. And I got up and I said, what's happening to me today? I got up and I said, I'm sorry for what I've done. And he said, I forgive you. And we sat and we had a cup of coffee for about an hour and had a chat about it. God, only God does that. That's not heard of. This kind of stuff doesn't happen. And now eventually I'm going to be going into that prison to do alphas and to hopefully try and bring God into other people's lives. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Thank you.